time now for hour number two of our big two-hour get-together this weekend here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation with George Capinelli. He's the author of a new book, co-authored with his wife, Sedana Capinelli. It's titled, Do Not Go Quietly, A Guide to Living Consciously and Aging Wisely for People Who Weren't Born Yesterday, published by Hay House.
Well, talking about terms for different age groups, you do talk about in your book the fact that, you know, we're going to have this demographic revolution, and it is going to involve various generations. You mentioned their names, the boomers, the Gen Xers, and the elders. And why should we all pay attention to this coming revolution?
Well, it's going to change life as we know it. You know, I mean, think about a nation of 300 plus million people, 150 million of which, half of which, will be 50 and over for the first time in history. That's a pretty staggering number. So as longevity increases, as birth rates decrease, and as the tax base shrinks as a result of fewer people being in the workforce, the impact of this demographic revolution, social, cultural, political, economic, ecological, will be really substantial. And what's amazing to me is that at this point in time, people in government on both sides of the aisle are asleep at the switch. People in many of our institutions are. And many of us, as citizens, are uninformed about the real consequences of this demographic revolution. So I like to say people in Washington who sometimes are half our age, have half our experience, and unfortunately sometimes half our intelligence, are making decisions about the future that they're not really equipped to make. So it's our job, we believe, and that's one of the reasons Sedana and I wrote Do Not Go Quietly. It's our job to not only work on ourselves, but get back into the conversation, to take our rightful place in the decision-making about the future, because we should be the ones that are largely determining what the quality of our life should be going forward, and how we should be accepted, respected, and honored for the contributions that we've made to our world.
Well, I can't agree with you more. And what I think, and I wanted your opinion about it, is that part of the problem that people are not informed about it, who are making decisions, is the fact that you don't see anything about it in the media. So aren't they helping the media to perpetuate our obsession with the young and our current aversion to aging?
Well, sure. You know, I mean, look, we live in a consumer-driven society, and that ultimately is another thing that needs to change. We have to remember that life is a lot more than about making and buying stuff, you know? So since the mainstream media is largely controlled by corporate America, the things they pay attention to and the focus they try to create, even though it's an illusion, is that, you know, everybody is eternally young, and not only that, but they should keep buying stuff. They should keep doing in the second half of life what they did in the first half of life. And that's a blatant illusion. And it's something that those of us who are in the second half of life have to change. We have to tell the truth about what a remarkable time of life it is, even though it has its limitations and its challenges. You know, we go through physical things we didn't go through necessarily when we were younger. We have some constrictions and limitations that we experience, but we also have a hell of a lot of juice left. We have a lot of passion, a lot of creativity, a lot of understanding and wisdom. Many of us still want to pursue a lot of dreams and opportunities. So this is a very rich time of life, and we have to stand up for ourselves. We have to demand that the media start telling the truth about life and stop creating some false image simply to sell more stuff.
You're so right. And what I like that so much that you have done, because this is a problem and people do talk about it sometimes, but you and your wife have gone about creating some solutions for the present situation that we're going to face, that we're basically denying as a society. And you've done that by starting an organization called Age Nation. So for those who don't know what Age Nation is, and can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what kinds of solutions? Because that's the whole thing, finding answers so that we can all have a better quality of life as we age.
Well, I think both Age Nation, which is agenation.com, is the way that people can find out more about Age Nation. And Age Nation does a lot of different things. It has a very robust online presence on its website. The Age Nation Post has articles and information in 9 major categories. Age Nation Radio Network carries podcast shows that cover a range of topics that are really vital and of interest. Age Nation Live presents conferences and workshops, and soon we'll be presenting a number of online classes and webinars and whatnot. Next is our national digital magazine, and it's available free just for a click on the icon. We've created a World Council of Wisdom Keepers that includes a number of major authors and notable experts of our time who are committed to creating an age-friendly world. So we do a lot of different things. We have a consulting division that works both with people as well as organizations. And all of this is designed to create a world that honors elders and is much more age-friendly and provides solutions. The book, of course, is filled with solutions, and it focuses on 2 kinds of solutions. Those solutions in which we direct our attention to ourselves and we complete or explore areas that we've come here to learn that will make our lives more successful and more satisfying and more joyful. And then there are a series of solutions about what we can do in the world around us. Because we believe that what we need to do is make right our relationship with ourselves. And in that way, what we do out in the world will be more constructive and positive.
As I say, you talk about the different things that you should do. And, of course, one of them is living in the present, because a lot of us don't. We worry about what's going to happen next. But one thing you write about, I wanted to ask you, concerns our feelings. And you say we need to slow down our rapid pace through life. And what did you mean when you said that?
Well, you know, feelings are an integral part of this human instrument that we move around the world in. And if we override our feelings and we don't pay attention to them, then we're losing a terrific opportunity, because feelings are like a radar system. They're an early warning system, an early detection system. They let us know whether we're on course or off course. And if we blow right past them and pay no attention to them, then we're losing a terrific ally. So the chapter in the book is called, Go No Faster Than Feelings Can Follow. So you need to check in, we believe. We need to check in with ourselves and ask ourselves, how are we feeling? Is this positive? Is this negative? Is it something that's advancing us? Is it something that's depressing us? And when we begin to get those answers, then we need to find out what can we do to shift what we're doing so that our feelings are uplifting and constructive and positive. Because the more we live in the present moment and the more we live with positive, complementary, energized feelings, the more passion we have, the better our health is. I mean, you know, there are decades and decades of studies that demonstrate positive, uplifting attitudes and feelings, contribute to positive, uplifting lives.
You said it so beautifully. Now, my final question for you is, have you learned anything personally from writing Do Not Go Quietly?
Oh, we've learned a ton. You know, we started it largely because we made passages with both sets of parents. And at that time, we discovered how unprepared we were, they were, and the world around us was to deal with this demographic revolution. So we've learned an awful lot about being in alignment with ourselves, doing our own personal work of forgiveness and deeper understanding and learning each day, because let's face it, life is a school and you only graduate at the end, and what you graduate with, you get to take with you.
That's George Capinelli in conversation with Carol Marks. The book that he co-authored with his wife, Sedana, is titled Do Not Go Quietly, A Guide to Living Consciously and Aging Wisely for People Who Weren't Born Yesterday, published by Hay House. They're also the founders of Age Nation, and their website is agenation.com. More Carol Marks conversations coming up when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year, illegally. Poaching is just one of the risks animals face at our hands. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor. I grew up in the beautiful rural countryside of Ohio, where animals roamed freely in the open forests. I have a deep concern to help preserve those open spaces for our wildlife friends so they can live and thrive like they used to. Destruction of their habitats threaten their very existence. The best way to protect wildlife is to protect the land where they live. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats, and establish permanent sanctuaries. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE. Or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation with Gwen Weiss-Numeroff. She's a former advertising executive turned nutritionist and is the author of Extraordinary Centenarians in America, Their Secrets to Living a Long, Vibrant Life, published by Edgio Publishing.
Now, you really started on your quest to meet some of the oldest long-living Americans and find out what contributes to their longevity, whether it was genetics or diet or exercise or personality or really their outlook on life. When your mother, who passed away, and I think it was a young age today, at 70, of ovarian cancer.
Yes, that is what I was already practicing nutrition for probably at that time about 10 years since the corporate wellness and all, since I switched the careers. And it was actually working in terms of helping my health and others, and all of that was fabulous. And then once my mom passed away, which was about 3 years ago, as a matter of fact, today is her birthday, so it's very apropos to have this interview.
Absolutely.
She died of ovarian cancer. We found out 3 weeks before she died that she actually had it. So that just was the last straw. I needed to meet the oldest, and at first it wasn't so much the most extraordinary. It was the oldest people in this country, but my criteria was very simple then, 100 years old, give or take a few years, and had a mental capacity to answer questions based on their genetics and lifestyle habits and hear their incredible journey through their lives of 100 years, a whole century. But then when I started looking for them, I came across these incredible, incredible people that were doing remarkable things in their 80s, 90s, 100s. So my criteria actually shifted upwards, that, yes, give or take a few years, less or more than 100, but actually doing remarkable things, you know, not just for their age, just in general, to inspire people even more that there's so much more to be done in life and how to stay healthy and how do they stay healthy and just keeping their lives joyous. So that's what catapulted me on this journey, this two-year journey, to find these remarkable people so that to give myself hope as well as others, you know, that you don't have to fear aging. And it's, you know, not everyone is going to have a disease. And there are people out there that are somehow, you know, preventing these things from happening somehow. And I needed to find out what those secrets were.
Now, Gwen, did you were concerned about genetics because of your family's history. What role did you find genetics played in the health of the 30 people you interviewed?
Well, fortunately, it didn't play as much of a role than I suspected, and I think many other people do or did, maybe not so much after reading the book. I can tell you, I asked every centenarian what the age and causes of death of their parents and their siblings, more relative were their siblings, because it's, you know, they're the same generation from the same womb. I mean, their parents were from a completely different generation. But what I found was 80% of them that had siblings, and most of them did, had siblings that passed away in their 60s, at least one that passed away in their 60s or younger, which obviously is not great longevity. So what that demonstrates is that, yes, genetics played a role, maybe 30%, but what it demonstrates is that the genetics didn't necessarily save them or doom them, that we're not necessarily doomed or saved by our genetics, and that you can turn your genetic markers on and off based on many different lifestyle factors. And that's what these centenarians proved. Whereas they had heart disease and cancer and various diseases like myself in my family running through their families, and they were able to avoid them.
And I think one of the important things that the centenarians you interviewed had in common was they all had a strong sense of purpose and making a difference in their family lives, the community, or the world. And you interviewed, well, there were so many that were inspiring. I wish we could talk about all of them, but one of them was 101-year-old Ruth Gruby, I think that's how you pronounce the name, who was a photojournalist and author, and she was such a remarkable humanitarian, and she helped so many beleaguered Jews around the world. It was really mind-boggling what she did.
Oh, absolutely. I was awe-inspired by this woman, and I remember going up in the elevator to her apartment thinking about just how many accomplishments and still what she was, from what I had heard when I researched her, what she was still doing, saving Jews in Ethiopia by helping them craft pillows and do needlepoint so that they can sell them so they can get out of there. She's still working on missions to do these things. Her whole life was based on helping others, and it definitely is a commonality amongst all of them, is that they look outward. They're do-gooders, and do-gooders definitely, and I have this in the book as well, research that backs it up, that it increases the quality and quantity chemically in your brain as well, increases the quality of your life by doing good for others. And they all had that in common. I don't think that was a coincidence.
And it was amazing to me. So many of them were continuing to work. They had a passion for what they do. There was 101-year-old lady, Abby Hamilton, who was the first, I guess, a major real estate woman in the United States to have a huge, huge business. And she's still working.
Yes. Still an unbelievable. I actually called recently. I called to see how she liked, actually, the book. I had sent her the book, and I hadn't heard from her. And a lot of times I speak with her secretary, who's worked for her for 40 or 50 years, Betty Turner. And they're just so adorable. They're so Southern. I just absolutely adore them. And Betty called me back, and she said the reason why Abby didn't get back to you was because she had a gallbladder attack. When she was visiting, she was at a fundraiser, and it was actually in honor of her. And Tony Orlando, remember Tony Orlando?
Oh, yes, the singer.
That is her favorite performer, Tie a Yellow Ribbon from the Old Oak Tree. That was her favorite song. She went to the fundraiser, and she had an attack and collapsed. Bottom line is she was in the hospital, and Tony Orlando visited her. in the hospital and sang the song to her.
Oh, how nice.
And she's perfectly fine, knock wood. She is so fine. She's so resilient, this woman. And she's already, like, you know, getting back to herself at 101 after surgery. And it's just incredible, incredible. And she's still running her company, which is, I think, the 11th largest realty company in the country.
That is really something. Now, the centenarians you interviewed for the book had occupations ranging from a barber to a well-known author. What did they have in common when it came to their weight and being active and possessing a good sense of humor?
Well, Well, for one, weight. None of them, I could say none of them were obese. All of them maintained, whether it was a barber, it didn't depend on gender or income or anything. And there was really, like, it was such a slice of life of all different types of people in this country. And they still all maintained an optimal or moderate weight, meaning that some of them were slightly overweight, like 10 to, I'd say, 30 pounds. And it wasn't always in their life, maybe one or two. But none of them were obese, and they were able to control it. And they ate moderate portions. That's what they had in common. They ate really all different types of things. They never even really thought about their diet or nutrition. But they always, growing up through the Great Depression, they ate very moderately. They never ate in excess. And vegetables were always a staple on their plate. And the sizes of the portions were very different. Like a size of meat, they ate such a moderate portion of meat. It was like the size of the palm of your hand, which it's supposed to be. And ours is maybe four times that size. Maybe that's like 3 ounces. So the culture of eating was very different for them based on their formative years, you know, growing up through the Great Depression. It was just very different. And they maintained it. So they were able to maintain a very optimal weight. They all had a great sense of humor, every one of them, even those that had such a difficult life, and some of them really, really did. They just triumph over challenge. They embrace it. They move on, and they seek joy. And they were just so warm and witty and just so accessible and generous with their time. They literally changed my life.
Gwen Weiss-Numeroff in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled Extraordinary Centenarians in America, Their Secrets to Living a Long, Vibrant Life, published by AGO Publishing. For more information, go to livingvibrantly200.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and the rest of the way we are going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just a few minutes from now will be speaking with Jeff Brown, the head of voluntary plans and consumer services for Aetna Incorporated. And he'll be talking to Jeff Brown about what employers need to know about current and impending health care reform under the Affordable Care Act. And Richard, before we listen to that conversation, let's take a look at the pop cultural horizon. Anything come across your radar screen of note to our upper demographic constituents?
You know, we lost a rock and roll guy who was a legend among other rock and roll guys, but most public people don't know who he is, and that is J.J. Cale. Does the name ring a bell, Michael?
Well, it certainly rings a bell to me. I didn't know, though, that J.J. Cale had died. How old was he?
He was 73, and he wrote such songs. He was the guy that wrote Cocaine. Eric Clapton did that, and After Midnight, and a song by Leonard Skinner, that old Southern band, They Call Me the Breeze. Those were his most famous compositions, I guess.
Great song, great songs. Leonard Skinner, they really rock on that one. Cocaine and After Midnight, Eric Clapton, two of his big songs. I remember back in the old days when you and I were on rock and roll radio. And the main concern of rock and roll radio in those days was whether you were playing songs that proselytized the use of drugs, you know, because there were a lot of drug lyrics, and cocaine was one of the ones that some of them were anti-drug, but who knew?
Yeah.
Some of them sounded anti-drug, and they were for drugs, and then some of them were about horses and things that are symbolic, and you didn't know they were about drugs. But cocaine.
Well, a lot of those old blues songs too were pretty sexually oriented, and I don't think we really knew it. I think we didn't know what the metaphors and things were about sex and drugs and all that kind of stuff. But it was out there.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I'll tell you some of the drug songs that were on the borderline. With a little help from my friends. From Sergeant Pepper. I'd get by with a little help from my friends. What does that mean? You know, but cocaine, was that a pro cocaine? Who could be for cocaine?
Well, it was she don't mind, she don't mind, she don't mind. So what does that mean?
Do you remember Cracklin' Rose by Neil Diamond?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Most people thought that was about a woman named Rose. It was about Cracklin' Rosé, a bottle of cheap booze. I see that our producer, Beverly Santinello, is going, really? You see, it's one I didn't know that until like 2 years after the song came out.
And it's amazing how many songs you listen to over and over and over again, and you can sing the lyrics and everything, and you really don't know what they mean.
I'm always embarrassed when I come to the revelation that I know what the lyrics are, and I don't know what they mean because I don't pay attention to them. Because I am a literal kind of person, and I do like lyrics, and I think they're important, but I'm only a man. And sometimes it's like, wow, I've been listening to this song for 25 years, and it was about that?
Well, I've recently decided what I think is the greatest rock and roll song of all time.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Is this a joke, or are you serious?
No, this is true. This is true. I've just come to this realization. It's one of the simpler songs. It's not real complicated in some senses, and others it is. And it's perfectly sung, perfectly played, and you hear it all the time on commercials now, which kind of ruins it.
Commercials? Okay, because I was going to say it has to be Melanie's Brand New Key, but
no.
No, okay. Barry Manilow, Copacabana.
No.
No, okay. How about Feelings by whatever his name was? Morrissey?
No.
Thanks. Okay, what is the song?
Baba O'Reilly.
Baba O'Reilly? It's only teenage wasteland. What's that about?
Now, you think, well, it's out here in the fields. I fight for my meals. I put my back into my living. It's an anthem at this point, and it's got that great synthesizer beginning, and it's got that great violin close.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a synthesizer.
It's just got those three chords, dun, 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 those three basic chords you hear in a lot of rock songs, but it's performed with such gusto, passion, and great lyrics that I think it's the best song ever rock and roll.
It certainly is a good one. And the problem with it is that you and I, having been DJs and fans of that music through the 70s, I think Bob O'Reilly came from the Who's Next album, which was back in the early 70s, which makes it ancient. The problem is we've heard it so many times that you lose the ability to feel its freshness and what it is.
Except that they're using it in a Mazda commercial now, and they're using the live version.
Yeah.
And every time I hear it, I turn it up.
Wow. Well, it makes me want to run out right now and go zoom, zoom, and buy a Mazda.
And most people think it's Teenage Wasteland is the name of the song.
I know. Well, Baba O'Reilly, come on. We never questioned what that was even. We just accepted
it. It's about Bill O'Reilly, obviously.
Clearly. I want to talk about music lyrics when we come back after your conversation with Jeff Brown, which is next. Richard Neer with us. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged in to A Touch of Grey.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here, as promised, is Richard Neer with Jeff Brown. He's the head of voluntary plans and consumer services for Aetna Incorporated, and he's going to talk to Richard about what employers need to know about current and impending health care reform under the Affordable Care Act.
Now, if you are a part-time employee by choice, and there are some who are and some who are forced to be part-time employees because they can't find full-time work, obviously, the insurance laws are changing with the Affordable Care Act. What are the things you should know vis-a-vis how it affects your insurance, if you indeed have insurance?
Yes, I think the fact is that only, you know, one in four companies or employees are eligible for coverage. Part-time employees are eligible for healthcare coverage at the workplace, so they're not as likely to have workplace alternatives for their coverage. And really what they should know is that they need to know that the Affordable Care Act, by way of public exchanges, will provide some options for them to find coverage on a guaranteed issue basis, which is a way of saying there won't be any medical questions asked and there won't be any pre-existing condition limitations. So we are making some progress in terms of creating a marketplace where employees can access coverage without having to have absolute proof of good health. So they will have options, and hopefully they should inquire about their options at the worksite as well. But ACA itself, other than creating exchanges, did not create any new solutions for part-timers explicitly. It mainly induced full-time employers of full-time employees to offer coverage to those full-time employees. And unfortunately, along the way, it set the bar for full-time employees at 30 hours. And what we've seen is that many employers who previously would have defined part-time employment as 35 hours and below are actually suppressing their hours below that 30-hour mark so that they either don't incur a penalty or don't incur a new health care burden for a previously uncovered population. So they will have alternatives. The exchanges are one alternative. Hopefully they'll have alternatives in the worksite as well. Other than that, the law didn't do as much explicitly for part-timers and created some complications along the way, actually.
Now, what about these exchanges? I understand that some states opted out of the exchanges, so the federal government has to basically be in charge and form them?
That is correct. So, we'll get to see the exchanges come online. Some have greater carrier availability than others. Those will be online on October 1st, and they will hopefully provide choice not only with regard to the level of coverage, but the health plan providers that they can select from on those exchanges.
Now, there were recent headlines in the papers that New York State, actually the premiums will go down perhaps as much as 50%. In New Jersey, right across the river, though, the premiums will stay the same and perhaps even go up. What is the difference there? Why would some states do better than others in this case?
I think the magic is in the numbers. I mean, I think how the counting gets done. The fact is that I think we're doing a good thing socially if we are trying to create a marketplace that gives access to coverage to everybody. And it doesn't allow people to turn coverage on only when they need it. So that's good. But by bringing in previously excluded populations, that didn't qualify for coverage, that's going to bring costs up for the previously covered healthy people. And so I think, some of the differences in the counting and some of the differences in, the policies that existed previous to ACA in those states. But there's just no getting away from the fact that if we had 45 plus million Americans that were uninsured before the ACA, and we want to put a dent in that we're basically going to have to bring new costs into the equation. Hopefully, do it in a more responsible way over the long term. But that's going to, we are going to be spreading risk, and in general, that's going to generally increase costs in most states.
Yeah. And the politics of this is complicated because you've seen the House of Representatives some 37 times try to repeal ACA in its totality. There hasn't really seemed to be any kind of impetus to tweak it. And it seems like when you're talking about the 30 hours versus the 35, when we're talking about the small businesses where they've put that back 1 year, that there are areas that probably do need tweaking. Is there any hope politically that maybe some of these areas that both sides agree need to get fixed will get fixed before full implementation, or do you think that it's all or nothing?
Well, I think that, one thing I think is that my crystal ball on healthcare reform was fairly well broken the first time around, so I didn't win the office pool on ACA getting passed, so you may not want to take my political handicapping to the bank, but I don't think the Republicans are likely to be successful with sort of a nuclear option for healthcare reform. I do think that the administration is exhibiting some pragmatism in how it's dealing with the implementation and some of the unintended consequences of the act, and you see that with them delaying the enforcement of the penalties for the employer mandate for full-timers. So they're delaying that by a year, and I think that'll allow consumers to see the exchanges at work, employers to do the same, as well as employers and regulators to sit down and think about, how can we refine some of the implementation of the law so that some of these perverse consequences like suppressing hours for part-timers or reclassifying employees from full-time to part-time status, that those are not the primary impacts and that we get a more healthy transition into full implementation of the law. So I don't think blowing it up is a likely option, but additional pragmatism and hopefully reaching out to other market participants like employers will be in order and will help smooth our way into full implementation of the law.
That's Jeff Brown in conversation with Richard Neer, and he is the head of voluntary plans and consumer services for Aetna Incorporated. Richard Neer returns with some final words that we'll share when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we continue our ongoing discussion about things with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. So, Richard, interesting conversation with Jeff Brown. Found out a lot. And now we go back to talking about songs and rock and roll and lyrics and the evolution thereof.
Now, I told you what my favorite rock song is. I'm going to ask you what yours is.
Now, is it your favorite or do you think it's the best? Are you being the
best.
Music critic?
Best.
Okay. You didn't tell me what your favorite was. What's
well,
the one?
My favorite, too.
Really?
Favorite best.
My favorite rock song of all time?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have one. I'm sorry. I have, like, top tens of everything. And I have, like, about 100 songs in my top ten. It depends on it depends on the mood I'm in.
Well, you know, it's funny I'm that way too, because when people say, what's your favorite? Who's your favorite band? What's the best concert you've ever been to? And you can't tell them because you've been to so many. that they're all different, and time kind of dilutes your vision of or your memories of what was good and what wasn't good.
Well, also I've gone through periods where certain songs were my favorite for a time, but again, because you and I spent so much time spinning discs on the radio and we listened so much, you burn out on them. And, for example, at one time I thought that Judy Blue Eyes, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes by Crosby, Stills, and Nash was the greatest piece of music ever made. Of course, I laugh at that now. It's still good, but it's not the greatest piece of music ever made. It's not even, it's absurd.
When you go across genres, you really can't, because if you listen to classical music, the complexity and the skill, the virtuosity, right, you can't compare that to anything in the rock genre or jazz or anything else, really.
I mean, the funny thing is, I would say that classic rock is my favorite genre because it played such a role in my life, but I've got some really big, big faves that go back to the pop era. And some of my favorite pieces of music, crazy, are not even in the rock or pop genre. I would rather hear Judy Garland sing Swanee from the Carnegie Hall album than anything. I wish I were there. I love all those old singers that used to go, nah.
Well, you just Al turned Jolson. Me on to the Carousel at Lincoln Center that they did recently that was on PBS, and
yes.
I've watched about half of it now. I haven't watched the whole thing, but it's fabulous.
Isn't it? I mean,
incredible.
And the concept of having the New York Philharmonic Orchestra on the stage with the actors, because that's the music. It's the music and it's the expression. Don't lose it in a bunch of special effects and expensive staging. That's camouflage. If anybody listening to this has a chance to check out the Live at Lincoln Center series on PBS, check out if they have an on-demand version of the Carousel by the Rodgers and Hammerstein that they did recently. It's fabulous. You're right, Richard. I'm glad you enjoyed
and
it.
And South Pacific at Carnegie Hall was another one that was incredible.
Yeah, and these are done one step beyond book in hand. I mean, they're just basically very, very simple staging. But the acting in it was compelling. You know, I believe that the simpler art is, the better the content comes across, whether it's music, whether it's movies. I'm not a big fan of special effects getting in the way of a simple message.
Well, you know, back in my youth, Richard Burton did Hamlet on Broadway with John Gielgud, and they did it in stage clothes. They did it in rehearsal clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most powerful version because the words and the acting came through. You didn't get distracted by special effects
or
other stuff.
So I guess my favorite songs ultimately are the simple ones, and we'll pick this conversation up again in forthcoming programs. Richard, thank you for joining us. Excellent job. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line. Thank you, Carol Marks, you wonderful woman, and for all the work that you do on behalf of the upper demos of our country. Thank you to Steve Wiseman, Kevin Casey, the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, your friendly anchor, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.